Welcome to episode 91 of Beer with Strangers. I'm your host, Tony Russo, and I'm joined this week by official pinch hitter, Sean Hager.
Hey guys, how's it going?
So this week we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. We're going to start off, you get no weather report, I'm sorry for those of you I know. We were at the beer festival and one of the guys grabbed me and he's like, the best thing I love is getting the weather report from Doug 2 days after the weather's been like that.
Yeah, well it's sunny. Right. 70s?
Yeah, sunny in the 70s and probably will be when you actually maybe raining when you hear this.
Yes.
Anyway, but we also have been starting off by talking about the homebrew culture. Because I just want to push that a little bit more on the show. And so when I came in today, there was a product on their
new product shelf
called the Grainfather, which I hadn't noticed before. I'd seen it before. It was someplace else. But anyway, this is the first time I'd seen it. And so I asked about it. And can you tell me what it is?
Well, basically, the Grainfather is a piece of equipment designed by a company out of New Zealand who traditionally made stills. And they kind of use, it's like a coffee pot-ish style bottom. But what the Grainfather did, they've integrated a pump. It has the electric element for heat. And it has a basket inside for doing all grain beer batches on your, basically your kitchen counter or your garage floor or wherever you choose to, but you're not, you know, stuck outside working in the, you know, outdoors because of propane or, you know, whatever you're using. And it's really streamlines it. It's takes up almost no space. It comes with its own wort chiller. It comes with its own pump. It's an all-in-one all-grain system, basically. The only other thing you have to have is a pot full of hot water to sparge with, which if you don't have a pot in your house, then brewing. You might want to prioritize some things.
Yeah, don't spend the couple hundred dollars on the brewing equipment without spending the $30 on a pot.
Right, but it's great, and we sold two. We haven't had them long. Both customers that have them rave about them. They wish they had switched to them years ago.
And so this is not just good for new people. This is good for people who are accomplished brewers.
It's definitely more oriented toward seasoned brewers who have done all grain. It's more of a, okay, we've had all the big hefty equipment and lifting and all that stuff. Let's kind of streamline it down a little bit to help things out.
And now this is a 10-gallon?
Six gallons, actually. But I can't imagine you'd get a very high-gravity 6-gallon beer.
Right.
Wouldn't be enough space. But I'm pretty sure you could do most 5-gallon batches without a problem.
I wanted to talk about what we're drinking. We're drinking the same beer two different ways. Do these have names?
Smoking Ruins is just what I put under on Beersmith. But it's a German-style Rausch beer. The one I'm drinking currently, this one, is a lager.
And mine's an ale.
His is an ale. I made both of these. I made 10 gallons of this beer for the last all-grain demonstration we had. And we split 5 into one pail, pitched lager yeast. We split 5 gallons off in the other one and pitched ale yeast. The ale obviously had to sit a little longer while the lager lagered, but it... They both came out pretty well.
Yeah, no, the beers are great, and the smoky flavor changes, and that's because of the yeast.
Yeah, the lager came out much more smoky than the ale. I think some of the fruitiness from the ale yeast itself maybe covered up.
That's what I think too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Neither one of them are crazy smoky. It's 10 for 10-gallon batch. It's 10 pounds of Beechwood smoked malt, 2 pounds of Cherrywood smoked malt from Breese, 2 or 3 pounds of Pilsner malt, and 5 pounds of Red X, which is just a darker Munich.
And it's a very flavorful beer.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of fun. And we here in America, we can brew beer pretty much anywhere we want. But the first story we want to talk about is about a homebrew club in India where like beer is legal in India, but homebrewing isn't. And so these... clubs, I guess, have kind of sprung up around India where people like have their own like little private bars, and they bring their homebrew there to sell and to share.
But they don't. They're not allowed to.
Not to sell, just to share.
Yeah, and they can't be very public about it because, like you said, it's illegal. So the article he sent me was a guy who was interviewing them, and when he took the picture, they all had masks on, and they wouldn't give them their real names because it is a, you know, I'm assuming the law over there is pretty punishmentful.
I mean, India's a secular country. You know, it's I don't know why it I don't know how that kind of thing slipped through the cracks. I don't know if it's if the business people, because one of the things, you know, that differentiates America is that, I mean, we had home brewing before we had professional brewing, because right. You just had to make your own beer if you wanted any. You know, the place didn't come with, you know, like sometimes you get a house and it doesn't come with carpeting. Well, when we showed up, there weren't any breweries here. So we, you know, people were just making their own beer. And so when they started to sell it, that's when, you know, if there's money to change hands, and the tax man is going to want his taste. Yeah. And that's how our beer got regulated. I don't see how, Indian beer didn't, but I mean, I've only had, I've had the Taj Mahal and Hummingbird. Are those the two big Indian beers?
I've never had any beer from India, other than India pale ales. Yeah. That's as close as I've ever. But I don't know what politically is fueling the.
Yeah, it might just be leftover. You know, just as we have leftovers from Prohibition,
right?
It might just be a leftover rule that says, you know, you need a license to brew beer, and you have to make, you know, enough beer for 10,000 people if you're going to make beer,
right?
So the Indian beers aren't bad, though. They're just regular. I mean, they were beer-flavored lagers, mostly. They may have been ales, but they weren't. They were closer. I felt they were closer to a German style than they were to an English style.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Surprising, though, because, you know, they had so many English soldiers there for so long.
Maybe it was a point of,
yeah, you know.
Maybe they had all the ale they were interested in.
True. Well, that's how it was when I was in the Virgin Islands of the Caribbean a couple of weeks ago, and all you can really find there is yellow, fizzy, American-style lagers. I just found a really good stout, though. But that was just – I got lucky on that one. But
speaking of really good stouts, we'll go ahead and segue to the new Iron Maiden stout.
Oh, hold on before you
– the mask.
Yes, because they wear masks when they are – being filmed or whatever. Maybe if you guys want, next time you're brewing your own batch of beer, or, you know, what have you, or if you're at a brewery, throw a mask on, send us a picture. You can either send it to me, Sean at extremebrewing.com, or send it a message to Tony.
Or you can post it. I mean, you can post it to the DAW Facebook page, or post it to the Shorecraft Facebook page or Extreme Facebook page, and we'll kind of collect them up and share them across all the social media. It just is like a fun solidarity, I think, kind of thing.
Saying we stand with birds of India.
I mean, you know, I know lots of people are standing with Belgium, but we're standing with the Indian home brewers because we know which battles to pick.
Yes.
All right, so. We're here at the Iron Maiden story, which disappeared somehow. Oh, there's an ad. It's an addy website. So Iron Maiden comes out with beers every now and again, and they're fine. What interested me the most about this, though, is the Robinson's Brewery, where the Iron Maiden beers are made, is an old brewery.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very old English brewery. And they this time revived a beer that they were making in the 1850s. And so they did a porter because porters were popular at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to talk about a little bit was how easy it is. I know there's a guy named, I think it's Ron Pattinson? Parkinson?
Pattinson.
Pattinson, who gets, who digs up a lot of these old recipes.
Yep.
Is that a popular thing to do to remake, you know, not ancient? I mean, because you guys do the ancient ales here.
Yeah, but for like classic beer styles, there is a underbelly to the homebrewers that are out there who are very, very much stuck to traditional and old style brewing. There's a guy who's part of Delaware Nine Homebrewers. Man, he's all about it. I mean, that's his thing.
He likes to make stuff from the 1800s.
Mm-hmm, like traditional styles, and he's very traditional brewing. Ed, who you guys have met before.
He's the one who introduced me to the
rye. Yeah, yep. He has 200 or 300 of that guy's recipes, and a lot of them are really neat. And this guy really goes above and beyond to find
these recipes. I tried to find just one. It's nearly impossible. It's very, very hard. It's not easily done.
A lot of digging through a lot of old paperwork and manuscripts and things like that. And
knowing what to look for.
Yes, exactly. Yep. And another big thing is back then is units of measurement are, especially in American culture. Like if you're trying to find the old, George Washington ales.
Right. But
the units of measurement aren't anything comparable to what we have now from what I've seen. But I do love the old styles. I think it's neat. I like to, get a taste of history, see what they were drinking.
Yeah, just kind of what it tasted like. It's. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's more. It would be more. There would be more barley flavor in the.
Oh yeah, definitely. Beers. It's definitely gonna be way more malt than hop characteristic. At least, I would assume. Now I had a beer from the 1950s. It was a remake of it. Once again, I never
like Rheingold or one of those or.
They just released an IPA like 2 years ago.
Valentine's
IPA. Valentine's IPA was way hoppier than I thought it was going to be for the 1950s, 1960s. It was incredibly hoppy. So I may be wrong. I mean, back then they might have really been into super bold flavors.
Yeah, just to hide the, to hide any imperfections.
Right.
Because I'll bet you had a lot more infections in beer.
Oh, yes.
Then.
Oh, I'm sure. No doubt. But it was also a lot cleaner air then, too. So that spontaneous fermentation could have also been significantly cleaner than, what we have flying around the air now.
Right. Next up, I don't know if you didn't catch our show last week. Last week we talked about Cigar City, and Cigar City has been bought out by a capital investment firm,
Firefighters something.
Yeah, Firefighter International or something.
Yeah.
And we talked about it. I have a theory about this that I like and that I believe is economically sound. And I feel like the investment buyouts are because of low interest rates. They're craft beer, buying into a great big craft brewery. Mm-hmm. Is a really safe investment, and you're going to get a better return than you're going to get in most other places. So these are people who are just looking at the returns that a company is producing now and saying, yes, I'll take those returns.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we were confused about was that the ownership, they sold more than half.
Majority shareholder, yeah.
Right. And so this most recent article coming from the Tampa Bay Times, it says that the ownership of Cigar City actually also got stock in the company that was doing the buying. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I feel like that's a smart move on if he wants to kind of protect his beer.
Yeah.
It's coming on board in the new company. Seems like a pretty good way to do it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it keeps your voice still there.
But then you still have enough money to do what you want.
Right. I think in this one he said that it was they were maxed out financially for where they were. It was going to take a whole lot of capital to go to the next step. And I think that's why they, in turn did this. Which this is the same company that owns Oscar Blues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oscar Blues bought Cigar City, and this company bought Oscar Blues. Is that how it works?
It's something in that ballpark. I want to say that the company owned Oscar Blues first, but Oscar Blues, the company, bought them, and which was just absorbed by the other firm.
And so we talked about this last week, but I didn't get your take on it, and so I would like it. Do you have any kind of view on this notion of consolidation? Where you have got a lot of these investment companies buying into a lot of the bigger craft beers.
I don't know. I don't know enough economic stuff to really throw a a concrete opinion on it, but I think if a lot of these breweries, they need the capital to take that next step. And, you know, most of these investment companies are fast return. I mean, they get what they want and then they sell back out of it quickly. I think if, you know, I think it's a scary way to get a loan.
Yeah. For me, one of the things that we only have one brewery that we really care about that's involved in something like this, and that's Dogfish Head.
Yeah.
Had some investment, but I don't worry that the beer is going to get worse, but I don't know how desperate I am to see all the expansion. I mean, one of the things, I mean, Dogfish Head is in the liquor business now, yeah. And I like that because I think their liquors are great.
Yeah.
So I like that move. I like that move for them. But, mm-hmm. You know, the quote from the Cigar City guy was like, we couldn't get any bigger. And my question is, how much bigger do you need to be? You know, what's the end game?
Well, I think their end game is to be able to get a bottle of Cigar City in everybody's hands in the United States, which is a great business model. And I think that if you are talented enough to do that without sacrificing quality, hey, go for it. I mean, Sierra Nevada, they're huge.
I mean,
freaking gigantic.
And their beers are still perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, I'll drink their beer anywhere I see it. Sam Adams. I mean, I know Sam Adams is a cop-out for a lot of people, but Sam Adams is the beer that got me into craft beer, so I have that respect for them.
Yeah, I mean, I'll still order a Boston Lager.
I don't like Boston Lager as much, but their seasonals I'm definitely down with. And I still think they produce good beer.
Yeah.
It's big, and you know, you can tell that it's a big company. They stick to relatively mild stuff. But, you know, their side projects have done great, too. Angry Orchard. Amazing, man. They're making money hand over fist with that stuff.
Yeah, people are crazy about that. That's not my bag. I'm not a cider
guy. I like ciders, but I'm very picky. I like Crispin.
Crispin's my daughter's, and this is not, I'm not knocking you, this is my daughter's favorite.
But over ice.
And it's my delicious. Wife, they're crazy about that Crispin. Mm-hmm. And so while we're speaking about ciders and whatnot, let's talk about mead for a second. It's not on the list, but a little bit of breaking news from the area.
Oh yeah. So, awesome friends of the shop and personal friends of mine and Tony's, John Talkington and, JR
and the other guy.
Yeah. JR is how I know
John him. And the other guy.
They have both, done their Kickstarter for the Brimming Horn Meadery, which we're all looking forward to coming to the Lewis area. If you want to check them out, look up Brimming Horn Meadery on Kickstarter. They reached their initial goal in just over 24 hours, but they could definitely use all the extra that you know, you can get. So if you want to get some really cool swag, or if you just want to help out two guys who are really trying to, like, you know, make their dream come true. And we had John out here the other night serving some homebrewed meads.
Right.
You know, and these will be...
He was at the wine event.
We had a wine event last Saturday for winemakers and, you know, let people try the stuff we made. But he brought out, I think, five or six different kinds of meads, and it was definitely the talk of the night. He had a crowd around him the whole time, and people really, really liked it. So... I'd say, man, if you can help at all, you know, go to Kickstarter, find the Brimming Horn Meadery, and help them out.
Yeah, throw a couple dollars their way. And then, of course, you got to support them once they're opened. It's important.
Yes.
It's important to get up there.
Yep. And if you've never had mead, which a lot of people haven't, there's really good mead and there's really bad mead. I would say try mead from a smaller craft person or even a homebrew version. Some of the big brands... I'm not terribly keen on.
I love the notion that there's such a thing as a big brand of mead.
Well, big brand in the Renaissance fair market, I should say. But it's another thing that's climbing.
Well, I'm not going to say I'm big, but I'm Ren Fair big.
Yeah, I'm pretty. People know me. But no, mead is awesome because, you know, it's like the oldest fermented beverage, and it's making a comeback. And like craft beer, you can make it dry, sweet, still carbonated.
you know, you can add anything to it.
Yeah, I can commit usually to 2 or 3 bottles a year. I feel like I bring a couple up to New Jersey for Thanksgiving mm-hmm. and for New Year's, because people get a huge kick out of it. I've only had the one. I had a pear mead, which I thought was excellent, but a pear mead was almost like more like a dessert wine where it was pretty sweet and kind of thick, and you don't want, you know,
a lot of it.
But I'm looking forward to trying some of the bolder ones.
Yeah. Well, theirs range anywhere from a dry orange blossom mead. There's ones that have like all kinds of deep, dark fruits and spices, real heavy, good for like holidays. And then there's other ones that are just like cherry. And
yeah, it's weird to think of everyday needs, mm-hmm. you know, but it's the same as
everyday wines.
I know.
Yeah. And it's really impressive. So if you guys, like I said, I hate to keep repeating it, but if you can go check them out on Kickstarter, help them out.
We've shared it
and look forward
and we
to
will.
It. Mm-hmm. And look forward to them coming out here and bringing another awesome craft out for us.
Very cool. And now next but not least, I want to know your take on this. Did you get a chance to read the Smutty Nose article?
I breezed over it. It basically sounds to me like they're going to have a raffle on who gets their rare beers.
Yeah, they're intentionally, and I'm not shitting on them. Drink what you like and be happy. It's what it says on the post. It's what it says on the wall.
Yeah.
But what Smutty Nose is doing is they're making a beer that's intentionally rare. And then they're getting, you know, they're raffling it off to different places, and you can rush to these places and buy
pints.
Fine. So we're gonna have sub podcasts coming out, and the one that you'll hear tomorrow or Monday is the folks at Fordham and Dominion talking about their new designs. The one you'll hear next Thursday is going to be Tom Noor from Evo. Mm-hmm. And he talked about several things. They have a new release coming out. But, you know, we talked a little bit about the Migration series, because mm-hmm. I've always been a huge fan of that, because they got onto that limited release bottle train very early. Yeah. I mean, they've been making them pretty much, if not since the beginning, since very close to the beginning.
Yep.
And that's one thing where you're going to have a release and everybody knows it's going to come out and there's going to be so many, and then, you know, fans of the brewery buy it. He's like, those bottles, they don't last in the brewery at all.
Nope.
And they don't last on the shelves for very long either, you know. And one of the things he was talking about was like stacking them up. So having three, you know, you have, I always buy two. And of course, I mean, he's like, well, buy three, you know, buy one and drink it. And then buy two and then taste them side by side in later years, because they use different casks with the same beer. And he's like, it's the same beer, but the casks change.
Right.
But that's different from making an announcement that you're going to start making a beer that will only be available in certain places. I don't wait online outside of clubs.
No, I don't. I don't pay cover charges either.
I don't pay cover charges, and I don't care how rare a beer is. If I like it, I'll drink it, and if it's local, then I'll be able to get it.
Right.
And one of the things that we tend to push here is, you know, drinking from breweries made within 100 miles. So, you know, that's kind of our fair thing to do. And if you like Smutty Nose, drink Smutty Nose. I don't boycott beers or anything like that.
No.
It's just that I drink what I like and I'd be happy. So I worry that one of the things that I try to cultivate when in my writing and in like my promoting craft beer, mm-hmm. I try to cultivate the culture aspect of it and the fun aspect of it, and downplay the super snobby aspect of it.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I admit I'm snobby on
it. You know, you're in the top 10.
Yeah.
But you're not a bad person. It's just, that's not your, like, but you're, so that's why I thought we might disagree, because your job is to kind of like to defend the higher end aspect of.
Well, not necessarily. Typically for me to boycott a brewery or a brand, most of the time for me, it comes down to politics. If your company is being represented by an a-hole, I am probably not going to buy your product. Because it, obviously everybody knows me. If it's Belgian, I probably won't buy it either because I just don't have a taste for Belgian beer. My hat's off to it. I respect the craft, but I just don't like it.
Right.
But, you know, it's no surprise that I have an issue with Lagunitas, and it's all political because their beer is awesome. But politically, I can't stand them. So.
And they're also made more than 100 miles away, so it doesn't matter.
Fact. But now the rare beer thing, I'm kind of like, you know, Swiss on this. I don't go out seeking them. I don't beer trade. But if I get my hands on something that's super rare.
I think if I didn't write that, I definitely thought it. Like, yeah, if you bring me some, I'm going to drink it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I will probably trade other beers that I have to do it. But I don't actively beer trade. Now, for those that do, you know, this is awesome. You know, if you put in a, if you can get enough votes, they might be able to, you know, bring you a cask near you and grab a growler or something. But
it's not an unneat marketing ploy. I just feel like it's a little. I think it underrepresents what we've come to expect about limited releases, which is, you know, we're doing this. We're doing as much of this as we can. We just can't do much.
Yeah.
As opposed to we could do more, but. You know, go fuck yourself.
Well, I don't know, because, I mean, Dark Lord from Three Floyds, they have a day once a year that you can go buy it, and it's a huge party and all that stuff. Cigar City, of all people, they had Hennepoo. They have a certain day that you can buy it, from what I understand. So maybe there is something.
But they just make it the once. It's not like they could make it. It's just that's.
Well, they could.
But it's a seasonal thing.
Right.
And that's what, you know. And maybe it's just the other thing is this is Brewer Magazine or whatever. Sometimes we read things in the news and it's like, well, people who, like General Simon reporters who don't understand how beer works.
Right.
But so it wasn't clear whether this is a seasonal release that they're finding a new way to get it out.
Yeah.
Or if they're just doing it. I mean,
Smutty Nose is what surprises me. I can't remember the last time I had a Smutty Nose beer that was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't. They have the monk on them. Is that the monk? Do they have a monk logo?
No. I think it was just a dog.
Yeah,
no, it's an otter.
That's an otter.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, that's Smutty Nose. And that will do it for the show for this week.
One thing, if you guys were interested, Iron Maiden beer is called Red and Black.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. It's called Red and Black, and that's on the site. If you want to check out the site, we have all the stories we talked about today are always posted at SureCraftBeer.com under the blogs section, and also on our Facebook page. Are there any classes coming up?
Not that I'm aware of. We don't have anything scheduled at the moment, but you can, you know, check us out on Facebook. Hit us up on the website, and we'll have pretty much everything we got going on listed.
And that's at extremebrewing.com, extremebrewing.com, or extremebrewing.com.
Yep. Facebook.com/extremebrewing.com.
And please reach out. Let us know what you think. Please rate us on iTunes if you're disposed that way. I haven't asked before, but I'm starting to ask now because I know we have a couple listeners. And we only have one review, and it's bad. And I understand that it's bad because it was back when the audio was miserable. But we fixed the audio, as you can hear. Mm-hmm. And so if you'd give us a decent review, just to make that one really nasty one go away, that would make me happy. Like, share, subscribe. Here on YouTube and stay tuned for the show. There's going to be an announcement about another beer festival that's coming up in April at Secrets. I feel like it's the 24th, but it could be the 30th. It's called a 12 pack of local or something like that. But we'll be giving away tickets. So if you want to get some free tickets, go to showcraftbeer.com. We're giving away to people who like our page. So we're doing that. And, that's all I have. So until next week. Now you say that when it's on the wall. So until next week.
Drink what you like and be happy.
Drink what you like and be happy. Thank you, folks.
Thanks, guys.
Beer with Strangers is recorded at Extreme Brewing in Laurel, Delaware. For more information about the show and for beer news and commentary, visit stateofthebeer.com, where you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes and follow along on whichever social network you're least likely to ignore. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. The State of the Beer is strong.